slucas.me presents.
Hello and welcome. I'm Sean from slucas.me. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. Sometimes I go by NoobDad131 or NoobDad76. I actually corrected that by going as NoobDad13176 on my Bilibili account that I just signed up for, so maybe I'll just change my name to that on all of the different platforms to make things easier. Hence the title of the podcast, Noob's Book Club. In this particular episode, I'm going to be talking about the latest Dragonlance book, War Wizard. I read the entire book in the week that I was away at the Finger Lakes. I took down some notes, so I'm just going to do a quick one-off episode this time around for this book, and then starting again next month, I will get back to the girl with the dragon tattoo. So what is War Wizard? War Wizard, as I mentioned, is a Dragonlance book. It's written by Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. It is the story of Magius, who was the wizard who fought aside Huma back during the Third Dragon War. I think part of it is them trying to reclaim some of their invention from Wizards of the Coast and Dungeons and Dragons. I know that there has been some issues in the past between the two authors and Wizards of the Coast regarding Dragonlance and how the property has been treated by Wizards of the Coast. So they put this one under the classic label, which I'll talk a little bit more about later on when I get into the discussion portion of the episode. So again, it takes place during the Third Dragon War. It involves Magius and his life growing up. Magius is born Devon Ayrshire. He is the descendant of another wizard, Adrian Ayrshire, who originally took the mantle of Magius back when he fought with Vinus Solomnus and the knights before they became prejudice against mages. In fact, it's Adrian who not really causes the prejudice, but something that happens with him is the reason for the prejudice. The mages plot to kill Vinus Solomnus, and Adrian tries to warn him, and he ends up getting massacred, and that's enough for Vinus Solomnus to, basically in a fit of rage, he writes down that the quote is, "The practice of magic is secretive, inherently deceitful, and dishonorable. Those who practice magic are forbidden to enter the knighthood, nor should they be connected to the knighthood in any way." So that's the quote that he writes down regarding mages in the Oath and the Measure, which is what the knights adhere to as their code of ethics. You'll hear more about that quote quite often through the book because it comes up a lot. Magius is born into Solomnia with magic, but they hate mages. His father had hoped that he would raise a son who would enter the knighthood. Obviously that's not going to happen, even though Magius tries again and again to forget about the magic and enter the knighthood, partially for his father, partially for his friends, partially for his adopted mother, who asks him to give up the magic, but he simply cannot because when you're a mage, it's part of who you are, and it's no different from the knights who believe that it's who have it in their blood to fight and protect others' honor. However, as you would expect from the premise of the book, and also just because authors often like irony. I don't know if this is really ironic. Is it ironic? Don't you think? Who knows? Anyway, he becomes friends with a knight, Huma. They essentially grow up together, and Huma is one of his biggest defendants, in spite of the fact that there's the magic that could potentially come in between them. Later on, Huma's parents have a little girl, Greta, that becomes the third in their unlikely trio. So since this is a different type of episode, I'm going to structure it differently. I'm going to give my first impressions of the book as I started reading it through chapter 6, and then there's a slight course correction that I'm going to take, and then I'll get sort of into the meat of the book with some different themes and questions that popped up as I was reading. So the quote that I mentioned earlier, I told you would hear it more often. The practice of magic is secretive, inherently deceitful, and dishonorable. Those who practice magic are forbidden to enter the knighthood, nor should they be connected to the knighthood in any way. That quote is doing some heavy lifting. It keeps coming up. I get that the major premise is anti-prejudice, but they laid it on pretty thick. Speaking of prejudice, while not explicitly so, they also rely heavily on stereotypes. The physically capable Huma, who's not a book guy. The bookish and weak Devin. Greta, the tomboy who tags along. Then we get the disappointed and abusive father. I know it sounds like I'm coming down hard on the book, and maybe I am. So here's the course correction. Even with those quote-unquote weaknesses, the story is still very well told. In fact, when I made the connection between the stereotypes, I tried to come up with other characterizations myself. I didn't fail, but I don't know if it would be the same story with other characters. A brawny wizard or a tactical genius knight don't require one another to grow into their potential. We're getting a character study, so I can forgive the characterizations. Also, they're not two-dimensional. Other than the father, who has a single-minded obsession with the evils of magic, the characters feel like living, breathing people. And that makes it enjoyable by itself. The thing that always comes up with books like this, when they're quote-unquote prequels, is it's an origin story of characters who are legendary in Dragonlance. You know their fate, as they've been told and retold many times over. Does this enhance or diminish the reading experience? I compare it to Star Wars when the prequels came out. Somebody wrote that if you can build tension in spite of there being in spoilers, then you know that you've written something that's engaging and entertaining. I always believe that whether you know spoilers or not, if the thing isn't fun to watch or fun to experience, then it's not going to matter if you know spoilers or not. More that you know spoilers because we've become such an anti-spoiler society, which I find weird. But anyway, I always say that if you know spoilers, it's still going to be entertaining regardless. And if it's not, then it really wasn't that entertaining to begin with. I mentioned the classic Dragonlance. I hadn't noticed that immediately, but then when I was looking at the cover, trying to figure out who drew the cover, I saw the classic Dragonlance sort of logo up there. As I mentioned, I may have mentioned, I don't know, Weiss and Hickman weren't happy with the direction of how Wizards of the Coast took the world that they built. Some of it feels silly, like the quote, "Takhesis is not Tiamat." That's a famous tweet, I think, from Hickman about, you know, fighting, that they said that Takhesis is basically Tiamat, and she said it's not. That, to me, whatever. I guess it's their world, and they can do whatever they want, but nitpicking and infighting is just petty to me. So now we have quote-unquote classic Dragonlance. Whatever, bro. Now I gotta worry about holy wars in my fictional settings. Get the fuck out of here with that stuff. One of the main themes of the book is the unlikely friendship between Magius, the persecuted mage, Huma, the knight in training, where they despise magic. However, Huma, even when he finds out, they try to keep it from him, but he knew all along, and he doesn't really care all that much. So this shows that Huma is both willing to be somebody's friend, regardless of who they are or what they believe, or even what he's supposed to believe. Which is kind of interesting because he's often held as this paragon of knighthood who followed each and every rule to the letter. I remember back in the first book, Sturm, who worshipped Huma and wanted to become a knight, even though the knights were long dead and there was other things that had happened in the meantime. But he wanted to be a knight, and he, I think, was shocked when the mage reveals that Huma worked with Magius during the war, or something along those lines. I don't know. It's been a while since I've read the book. I read the book a couple of times, but it's been a while since I read that particular book. But it's interesting that Huma is willing to put aside the prejudice built into the knighthood and simply be friends with Magius in spite of all that. I also talked about the fact that the characters feel three-dimensional. They feel like real people, not just caricatures, even though they easily could have, because they did go with the stereotypes that you often see and hear about in fantasy novels. I read Legends and Lattes, which breaks some of those stereotypes a little bit, and it proves that they can be done. But in this particular story, the way that they tell this particular tale, as I said, I don't think that any of those particular characterizations would have worked as well as having these two characters who need one another in order to advance and reach their full potential, as it were. So another big theme in the book is the prejudice of the knights against the mages. Again, they lay it on pretty thick, I think, but it doesn't detract from the enjoyment of the book. It's just after a while you kind of roll your eyes. Although I will say, our society has become way too familiar and comfortable with prejudice again. I've heard, parenthetically, it may be bullshit, but it does make sense in parenthetical, that reading fiction can help people see through others' eyes. If it's not bullshit, then maybe writing about the prejudice in a fantasy novel will help others to reckon with their own prejudice. I fear, though, that the old trick of screaming woke and plugging their ears might just be too ingrained at this point. Who the fuck knows with these assholes? You just don't know. Like, some things they scream woke, other things they don't scream woke, even though it feels like it's just as woke as the other stuff. I mean, woke doesn't really mean anything anymore because they've taken it and co-opted it and turned it into an absolute fucking punchline, which is just tragic because it actually meant something to black people, and for these assholes to co-opt it and turn it into a punchline is just another in the long line of shit that they put black people through. Apparently, as I was looking and reading through the book, this is designed to be interesting to longtime fans while also easing new readers into the world. I think that this actually works pretty well as that kind of book. It's obviously the beginning of a story. It's not the most interesting or exciting story that they've told. If you want to get into a more exciting story, read any one of their Dragons books. Everybody always points to the original trilogy and the Legends trilogy after that, but honestly, I like all of the books. I even like the most recent trilogy that they wrote, and I think it's really exciting. That one I wouldn't read necessarily as a first foray into the world because they talk a lot about previous characters. This one is strictly, they took something that happened in the past in the world and they've talked about and some other people have written about, and they're using that now as another entry point for more modern readers who maybe don't want to go back and read some of the previous stuff or don't have access to it or don't know about it or what have you. But this is definitely a cool way to find your way into Dragonlance, and it's also a less fantasy type fantasy book where it deals more with the characterizations and the relationships and that, as opposed to strictly fighting dragons and ogres and that sort of thing. But fear not, the fighting dragons and ogres is coming. They do fight some ogres in the book, and they fight other bullies in the book. So there is action in the book. It's just not the strict action of maybe some of the other books in the past. And that's not a bad thing. Actually, like I said, this is a very good way to get into the story because it is a slow build and it deals more with characterizations, and eventually they're going to get to the war and the Dragonlances and all of that. So I think also by keeping that sort of on the sideline for now, it builds some anticipation in the reader and allows you to come to some of that excitement naturally, like we did back in, goodness, was it the 80s when the first books came out? I don't remember, 80s or 90s. I read them in high school, so probably would have been somewhere in the 90s there that they came out. Holy cow, I'm old. But hey, I stay young by reading these kinds of books and playing video games and being a big old kid, as it were, no matter what. I guess some people have talked about the slow build. They say that they don't get into the action until late in the book, which I said, that's fine for me. I don't need nonstop action anymore in my fantasy or in my books. Sometimes having a good, well-written character story is the perfect way to enjoy a particular setting. Also, this is the first book of a new trilogy, so they had to set the scene. I guess they didn't have to. They could have kind of, I guess, ignored the first part of their lives or maybe used it as flashbacks, but I don't think it would have the same emotional impact if they did that. I think that by having the real-time abuse that Magius had to go through, it made it both more real and just more raw that you were dealing with it as it happened. I don't think that having like dreams or flashbacks or anything like that, or even him talking about how his father used to beat him, would have the same efficacy as that did. So I like the fact that this book is not as action-oriented, and I think it actually works better for what they were trying to do with this particular book. I mean, Weis and Hickman have been writing for at least 40 years, I just 30 years, something like that. So they know what they're doing. And yes, as people get older, sometimes they can lose their touch a little bit. But I honestly don't think that Weis and Hickman have. Some people, as I said, didn't like the most recent Dragons with Destina. And initially, I didn't either. Initially, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But after I kind of put that aside and just put on my, hey, I like to enjoy things hat, guess what? I enjoyed the fucking thing, and I enjoyed the fucking hell out of it. Is it too predictable? Maybe, but again, it's enjoyable, and I don't think that, unless you're trying to be critical of the book, I don't think that it's going to get in your way of enjoying the book because it is very well written and the characters are excellent, and just enough happens to keep you entertained and engaged. Like, I legitimately had put aside certain times to read the book because we were at the Finger Lakes, but then there were times that I just picked up the book and I started reading it again because it was that much fun to read. And that doesn't always happen with books, especially recently. You have so much vying for your attention, and for something to swallow your attention like that, it must be good, right? Yeah, maybe not, but I'm gonna go with it. Anyway, I'm gonna have like a quick little conclusion here, and I'm gonna talk a little bit about the end of the book and a particular character in the book, which is spoiler filled. So if you want to skip that part, I would say when we get there, probably skip about, I don't know, a minute or two, and you will miss that particular discussion if you haven't read the book yet and you don't want spoilers. Actually, there's spoilers right here. So, you know what? If you want to avoid spoilers, then I guess stop listening now and skip ahead a couple of minutes. And if you've gotten to the outro, you've gone too far. So, skip back a little bit. I don't know exactly how long this is going to be. So, I don't know how much to tell you to skip ahead. I'll put it in the show notes for those of you who want to skip ahead and not miss my magnificent outro. Anyway, so here's my conclusion. This is where the spoilers start. Read the show notes to see where to skip to not miss anything other than the spoilers. Spoilers here. Sure, they could have ended on Greta's death. I saw that was one of the things that people had to say, is that there was a natural stopping point that they had, and they could have stopped at her death and her funeral with the cliffhanger of war in the background, but that feels cheap to me. I think that going a little bit past that and making that be sort of the emotional anchor of the end of the book and a way for Magius to show that he is willing to think about different ways to solve a problem, but if that solution doesn't actually serve him, then he's willing to also go beyond that solution and not actually go through with it. That part I'll keep vague. Later on, Magius leans into the title of War Wizard once he learns about it. They said the name of the book, which is kind of cool. I thought that they might just be the name of the book and maybe just a metaphor for him as a wizard who serves with warriors, but it's actually an official title that the original Magius took and the new Magius leans into and wants to show them that this is something that can exist, even though Vinus Solomnis said that mages should not be part of the knighthood at all. Then we get, in my humble opinion, appropriate fan service with the creation of the Staff of Magius. We would have missed all of that if they had just stopped with Greta's death. It wraps up Chekhov's crystal ball from the beginning. He finds a crystal ball and they talk about how it's going to be important, or I don't remember exactly how they framed it. I think Greta says something about how it was so pretty, and it kind of puts it in your head that, oh, this crystal ball is going to come back later. I thought it was going to end up being a dragon orb, but it ends up being the ball on the top of the staff, and it connects back to the wider universe as a whole. The simple word, quote unquote, Shirak, holds a special place in Dragonland fans' hearts, especially when coupled with the staff. That's one of the first things that we get introduced to with Raistlin in the beginning, is he uses the staff and says Shirak, and the staff lights up, and this is the seeds of that being planted, and it took 50-year-old me and thrust me back to 14, 15-year-old me originally reading the books, and that, in my opinion, is how you do fan service. Now, I'm not against fan service at all. I know some people are. If you're against fan service, I think this is the kind of fan service that even those of you who are grumpy about it will enjoy. Now, the wider spoiler-filled conversation is, I wanted to talk a little bit about Greta's legacy. She dies, quote unquote, in battle to Friendly Fire. It's an interesting choice for a character that fought so hard to gain the trust of the knights enough to allow her to fight in that battle. She never became a knight because women aren't allowed to be knights, just like mages aren't allowed to be knights. But they admitted that she carried herself according to their precious oath and measure. To me, who only thinks and knows the folly of warfare, this simply deepens that belief. Granted, in the world of fantasy, good and evil are much more explicitly defined. So she fought for good, and therefore it's easier to say she did not die in vain. They give her a true hero send-off as Magius wrestles with the device of time journeying. An interesting send-off all over, and what makes these books so enjoyable. So they're fantasy books. People often write off fantasy books as fluffy or poorly written, and I'm not sure where that comes from. Like, all the fantasy books that I've ever read have been deep and engaging and interesting. So I don't understand how fantasy and science fiction have become sort of the whipping boys of literature, especially when you consider that, like, Frankenstein, the first science fiction book, is considered a classic. Anyway, that's neither here nor there right now, but these books, not only do they entertain you, but in a lot of ways they make you think. They made me think about the prejudice. They made me think about war and the ultimate sacrifice that people make and why they might make that sacrifice. And also, it got me back to my teenage self and thinking about why I enjoyed these books for so long and why I continue to come back to them. At the end here, I just put a note that says hero's journey question mark. I was going to search it. I did do like a quick rudimentary search. Maybe I'll go back and do an addendum or something where I connect the book to the hero's journey. It's something that people talk about all the time. It guess it's stuck in my head because we saw The Odyssey this summer, and Magius went through the test that all magic users go through on Kryn, the world of Dragonlance, and he quote unquote died and came back, and that also made me think of the hero's journey and sort of how that all connected to the book. But I didn't get to jot down any notes for this particular part. So, as they say in corporate America, let's stick a pin on that and come back to it. Circle back. Let's stick a pin in it and circle back at some point. We'll see. Do I recommend the book? Yes, very much. If you like fantasy, I think you'll enjoy this book. If you've never thought about Dragonlance and all of a sudden it's popping up on your Reddit or your social media feed and you want to give it a chance, then I would say definitely read this book. It will get you hooked and it'll make you want to read other books. If you're a fan of Dragonlance, then you'll definitely enjoy the book. It's Weis and Hickman. They know what they're doing. They write a good book, and since I read it so quickly, it's going to be at least a year, maybe a year and a half. I don't know. I haven't looked up when the next book is coming out, but it's going to be a while until I get to read book two and see if they continue to work their magic. As always, thanks for listening. You can find me if you haven't already at slucas.me. There's this podcast, there's articles. I've written mostly articles about movies that we've seen this summer, The Odyssey, Spider-Man, etc., etc. I also migrated the Two Guys Gaming Archive to the website. There's a banner link at the top. There's also a banner link to the Ready Player One challenge that I'm putting myself through, quote unquote, that you can check out. It has a link to our socials, including the YouTube, which is NoobDad131, and TikTok, which is NoobDad76 for right now. I might change them both to 13176 now that I have that handle that I use for Bilibili. I will be back in September next week with a continuation of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys. Be good, stay safe, and have fun.
slucas.me